Good evening. Good evening, family. Welcome. We have a great group of folks here from all over, of course, in our studio audience, but a whole big chunk of them coming from Louisiana. I asked them for some lagniappe, but they didn't have any. Good to see you all again. It's our EWTN live show, and we have a guest tonight, of course. But before I introduce our guest, I just want to remind you about this week we're recommending this prayer card. It's plastic-coated, and it's got St. Robert Bellarmine, S.J. He was a cardinal and a Jesuit saint and a doctor of the church. I strongly urge you to write for this because St. Robert Bellarmine is one of the patron saints of apologists. And we're living at a very exciting time. Back in the 1970s, we started to see a new rise of anti-Catholicism. And a whole group of Catholic apologists have arisen to stand to that charge and all the other charges that they give against our church. And these folks are coming up with answers that not only defend our faith, but I think something even more important, they help to promote it. And as a result of a whole movement of apologists, we have thousands of converts to the church. And we need St. Robert Bellarmine to pray for the folks at Catholic Answers and also and This Rock Magazine, at Envoy Magazine, the Catholic Answer, the work that we see with John F. Benkovich, all these other folks who are doing apologetics. And we ask for a dollar donation. If you would write to Mother Angelica, Irondale, Alabama, 35210. That's again, Mother Angelica, Irondale, Alabama, 35210, for a dollar donation for this card, to pray and ask for his intercession to continue this great work that's going on. And in one sense, this is related to my guest, who is also quite a bit of a very important apologist. It's Sister Margherita Marchione. Great Italian name, isn't it? Italian just sings, isn't it lovely? And she is a professor emerita at Fairleigh Dickinson University in New Jersey. And she's the author of over 40 books. One of the ladies in the audience said, oh yes, Sister Margherita, is she the lady who wrote the book about Pius XII? I said, no, she's the lady who wrote The Library. Look at this. The Library. It's just incredible, all the stuff that she's written. And I've been a good boy because I read them. So she's a member of the Religious Teachers Filippini, a group of sisters in Morristown, New Jersey. So please welcome our guest tonight, Sister Margherita Marchione. Sister, welcome. Enchanted.
Thank you for inviting me.
Great to have you here. Great to have you here.
The honor is mine, believe me.
Well, we want you to deal a little bit about the situation with Pius XII, because over the last few years, actually it's been almost 40 years since this started, of people criticizing Pope Pius XII as someone who was silent, or as in the book Hitler's Pope, nearly a collaborator with Hitler's massacre of the Jews. And not only of the Jews, but of other people. What's your take on all this? How do you respond to this?
It's very simple.
Yes.
What you just said is a myth, because the evidence that exists is so clear. His contemporaries did nothing but praise him. The Jewish newspapers, the New York Times, all the media understood what he was trying to do. He really, excuse me, had a network to save the Jews and other refugees from the Nazi terror. What he tried to do was defend the rights, human rights. He was not silent. His voice was heard. He was quoted in all the newspapers. He defended the Jews openly. He defended all Catholics.
As a matter of fact, didn't his criticism of the Nazis go back to the 1920s?
Prior to that, 1916, he was able to write, because he was in the diplomatic corps, was in the Secretariat of State for many years, even as a young Monsignor.
And that's the Secretary of State to the Vatican.
That's right. And he was also the nuncio in Germany for about 10 years. So he had plenty of experience before he became Secretary of State. When he became Secretary of State, in 1933, he was, in 1930 he became Secretary of State, but in 1933, when Hitler came to power and he signed the Concordat, he did that in order to protect the Catholics in Germany. It wasn't the first Concordat. There were many Concordats that the Church signed.
All right, first of all, just so everybody understands, what is a Concordat?
It's an agreement.
Yes.
It was like a treaty mm-hmm. between Germany and the Vatican.
Right.
And in this Concordat, Hitler, who signed it, he requested it, by the way, and that's why the Vatican could not even refuse.
So wasn't that...
That was an agreement to allow Catholicism to flourish in Germany. It was an agreement to give them freedom, which they didn't have.
Right.
And Hitler signed, he agreed to everything, and then 5 days later, he broke the agreement and began closing the Catholic newspapers, the Catholic seminaries. And then there was a reign of terror, really, not only against the Jews during that period who were being persecuted, but also against the Catholics. And the Holy Father had to protect the millions of Catholics in Germany.
Now, he himself spoke German very fluently.
He did. In fact, he was the one that actually wrote the encyclical that Pius XI signed, Brennendes Sorge, which was a condemnation of Nazism and totalitarianism. It was written in German so that the German people could understand what was going on in Germany, that Hitler was really a terrible man, that he was against religion totally.
Well, in that same encyclical, mit Brennendes Sorge, mm-hmm. the Pope, the one that, again, Pius XI signed it, but it was Cardinal Pacelli,
who
later on Pius
XII, that's right.
Who actually composed it in German,
mm-hmm.
and it condemned racism,
totalitarianism, yes,
and the state as the ideal. So, but again, that wasn't even the beginning of the condemnations. Earlier on, Cardinal Pacelli had been very strong in his condemnation of Hitler's ideas,
yes,
as a madman.
That's right. And when he was in Germany, prior to becoming Secretary of State, the Bolsheviks there, who were in Germany too, had come in, and they actually threatened his life several times. Mm-hmm. And at one time, I'd like to tell you this. You know Monsignor Sheen, of course.
Yes.
And Monsignor Sheen was always so proud when he wore his pectoral cross, because Pius XII had given it to him. And that was the cross that the Nazis shot, and the bullet hit that cross when he was being apprised in his own home. They came in because they wanted to get rid of him too at that time. So he has had so many dealings with the Nazis prior to the to becoming Pope. When he was Secretary of State, he sent 60 protests to Hitler during the period that he was Secretary of State.
Right.
So when you hear people say that he was silent, that is not true at all,
yeah,
because he wasn't silent. And then when he was Pope for 20 years, practically, his voice was heard on the Vatican radio, where he condemned Nazism. His voice was heard through the Osservatore Romano, through the Vatican newspaper. So how can they say that he was silent? I have in one of my books, I have an appendix of over 100 pages with documents showing what the Church did, what the Vatican did, what the Holy Father said, what he did to save these people. There were thousands of Jews who were saved. And to this day, many of them still speak about it. I received an email just 2 days ago. I have it here with me. The daughter of a Polish victim of the concentration camps. He was 18 years old. Her father was 18 years old when he was taken into the concentration camp. He survived, and he tells a story, and this daughter of his wrote it to me just a few days ago, of how everyone knew that the Holy Father did all he possibly could to stop this terror that was going on in Germany. So we have the documentation, we have the survivors who are willing to testify and who have testified.
Well, some of the most dramatic, again, the a couple different kinds of interference by the Pope to help people in World War II, Jews and non-Jews alike. On one hand, as you mentioned, the radio. I mean, he had Vatican Radio, and he had L'Osservatore Romano, the official newspaper.
That was his voice.
And he also had different statements that he would make. Now, to various bishops.
What about his Christmas messages?
Right.
Those messages were very clear, where he actually makes it so clear that what was going on in Germany. Mm-hmm. He was the first to let the world know what was going on there under Hitler.
And one of the things that I think is very important to remember, he is living in Italy, which is controlled by the fascists.
And then was controlled in 1943 by the Nazis for 1 year.
Right.
He was actually a prisoner in the Vatican.
Right.
Because right in front of St. Peter's were the Nazi soldiers guarding, and they couldn't go out peacefully. They were really prisoners there. And the Nazis knew that there were thousands of people hidden in the Vatican and hidden throughout Europe in the convents and in the monasteries. It's the history. The facts are so clear.
And you know some sisters from your own order.
But that's it. And that's the reason why I became interested in this topic, when I learned that our own sisters had hidden 114 Jewish men, women, and children. They were hidden in our convents in Rome alone, not to count other places in Italy and other parts of the world. So here you have the church taking a risk. It was a terrible risk, because the regulation, the rule was, the fascists and the Nazis, if you were caught harboring a Jew, the Jew was shot and so were you.
Mm-hmm.
Or was sent to a concentration camp and so were you.
Matter of fact, that happened to some of my cousins. They were caught.
Is that right?
Hiding a family of Jews, and the Jews were shot and then they were killed.
Oh, isn't that sad? Where was this from?
This is Poland. And so this is something that was very much part of life. And among my relatives who saved Jews, they had to save their family members.
That's right.
Or they had to be killed.
Actually change the names of their people and give them certification that they belong to the family. And it was horrible. It was a terrible. Look, we do say, and we know for a fact, that 6 million Jews died. But there were about 3 million Polish Catholics,
right,
who were killed too, and there was an equal number of non-Jews, Polish and other nationalities, who died during the Holocaust.
Right, they were killed in the concentration camps, in the slave labor camps, and they're shot on sight. Now,
do you know about the Polish nuns in a little town? I just learned this myself a few weeks ago. It's not in any of my books yet.
Yes. You haven't stopped right in the library, huh? Okay, keep it up. Keep it up.
Well, I just learned this story. In this little town in Russia, a group of Polish nuns were there, and it was a little Polish colony. They were probably taken from their homes in
captivity. The Russians moved the border,
so probably used to
Poland.
Well, there they were, and they killed 4 priests. There was only 1 priest left. And then they got 120 men and women, and they were deciding to kill them too. They just put them on trucks, took them to a forest and began shooting. So these nuns, there were 11 Polish nuns, And they said, well, look, these people have children. Let's do something. So the 11 of them marched off to the Russian commander and said, instead of those 120 people and the one priest, the last surviving priest in that area, please save their lives and kill us instead. Well, the 11 nuns were taken, put in a truck, taken to the woods, and they were shot one by one. And now they have been beatified.
Uh-huh.
They're called now, martyrs.
They were, and they showed a love for the neighbor. Now, one of the things that I think is also important is, while Pope Pius XII did say things, sometimes, quite frankly, he said more while he was surrounded by fascists and Nazis than Roosevelt, our president.
Oh, my goodness. We Americans ought to be ashamed of ourselves, because we had a shipload of 5,000 German Jews, children, who came here, wanted to have a solemn. Instead, the whole shipload was sent back to Germany. What did Churchill do? Yeah. Churchill could have averted the Holocaust, because he succeeded in breaking the code of the Nazis, and he knew what was going on in the concentration camps before anyone else heard about it. He and the British knew that, but what did they do? They kept quiet because they were afraid that then they wouldn't be able to understand what was going on.
Because they changed the code.
The Nazis would have changed the code,
right.
Surely. And so the news didn't come out. Only after the Holy Father was the first one to let this message get out that the Jews were being persecuted in this fashion.
And even in one of the stories that you mentioned, some Jewish leaders were warning against saying too much during the war, because every time you said something,
there
Hitler
was retaliation.
Would retaliate.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
The bishops and priests and everyone made it clear to the Holy Father, it's best if you do not speak out.
Yeah.
And he had to control himself. When he did speak out, what happened in Holland?
Yeah. Well, the Jews who had converted to Catholicism were arrested.
They were all arrested, and they were all sent to the concentration camps, and St. Edith Stein was one of them.
Right.
She was a nun. She was a converted Jew. And so they were all sent to the concentration camp, to the gas chambers.
Yeah, and they left out for the Christian churches that didn't say anything. They didn't arrest the converts from Judaism, but for the ones who did, for the Catholics, they arrested them.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one kind of testimony of the action and the words that he gave in a far more dangerous situation than Stalin, Churchill, or Roosevelt.
Do you think for a moment, Father, that the convents and the monasteries would have broken the rule of cloister? There was a strict rule in those days. 50 years ago, my mother and father never saw a bed that I ever slept in.
Yeah.
Because the convents were always cloistered. At least the private quarters were cloistered.
Sure. Sure.
So why would these people endanger themselves and break the rule and be condemned for that? They obeyed the Holy Father's orders, which were to open the doors, and they did open the doors all over Europe.
And as a result, one of the very important, as far as I can tell, one of the most important of the hunters of Nazis was Pincus Lapid. And he's
a historian, who wrote very favorably about Pius XII and what the Catholics did.
In your books, and I've read it elsewhere as well, he himself wrote a book saying that Pius XII saved more.
He calculated that there were 800,000 Jews who were saved by the church.
At the orders of Pius XII.
At his direction, yes.
Now, how is it then? Because also Golda Meir.
Oh, but there were so many.
She said she was the representative, and she had commended him. And then also there was a...
What about symphony? Einstein.
Einstein, yeah.
Right. What about Einstein? What did he do? He was a Jew. Mm-hmm. He had no love for the Catholic Church whatsoever. But then, when he saw what was going on and what the Holy Father, Pope Pius XII, did, he had great respect for the Church. He said, only the Church has maintain the truth. So you have these great people who recognize the good that was being done.
Now, if this is the case, how is it that beginning with the play The Deputy by Paul Hoot back in 1963, and then more recently, it's been amazing in the 90s.
What's happening?
A number of books are coming out.
Horrible.
One condemning worse than the Pope, other. Just when we're talking about canonizing him. Mm-hmm. What do you think is behind all this?
It's very sad, because, you see, this is not against, it's not a fight against Pius XII alone. It is an effort to break away from the magisterium. It is against the papacy, and it is not only Pius XII that they want to condemn. They want to condemn the church. Because the church stands for certain morals and is against so many things like pornography and drugs and abortion. So in order to satisfy what people want, the world that we're living in, well, they're going to condemn people like Pius XII.
And one, especially someone that we want to raise up as a hero, they want to
But he
condemn.
Is a hero.
Exactly, exactly.
And they cannot deny it. The evidence...
But they see, that's the thing. They do deny it. And this is where we have to respond.
This is where we have to fight. This is where Catholics have to have the courage to proclaim the truth.
And fight she does. Well, one of her her autobiography is called The Fighting Nun... My story. So this gal is not just right on here if you want a little bit of help with the fight.
Absolutely. That's why I'm here, to challenge the audience, to challenge everyone to do something. And I am planning right now to have a petition sent to the Holy Father, John Paul II, in order to let him know that Catholics are interested in the beatification of Pius XII, despite the fact that there's so much going on, so much misinformation, so much calumny. Pius XII is being misjudged, and believe me, Father, if I were an attorney, I would have a lawsuit going on.
I hope some of you attorneys out there listening.
Because
the
evidence is so apparent. It's so clear.
Yeah.
The documents are there. What do we do when you have a criminal that is in court? You have to prove that he's guilty.
Right.
Well, who can prove that Pius XII was silent?
Yeah.
Who can prove that he did anything wrong?
Yeah.
He was a great man. He was a compassionate man. He was a saintly individual.
Mm-hmm.
And I did meet him in 1957, and those piercing eyes still torment me because I realize what kind of a person he really was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame that we just allow this to continue. They claim that there are no protests. Why, here, look, on the cover of this book, you'll see a protest in French there.
Mm-hmm. So the persecutions in France against the Jews. This is from a statement.
No, it's a protest of the Holy Father.
Yeah, a protestation of the Pope Pius XII. In there, it says in French
against the Nazis.
It was a persecution in France against the Jews, and he protested it. So it's something that you put right on the cover of your book. Now, one of the things that I want to recommend at the outset is that folks start reading these books, because if we just don't know the data,
that's right.
If we don't know what actually is, and that's why I like your books, you don't just give your opinion, well, I like the Pope, so he's my friend. No, you show the facts, and I like that, because I used to say to my students, I don't care what your feelings are. I don't care how nice your feelings are. I don't want to know your feelings. Don't put them in a paper. I want the data. And you've got that.
Yes, that's
And this
very
is something
true.
That I strongly urge Catholics to get to.
And I had the people, the survivors, and the rescuers who tell their story. And I just heard some things, as I said, I still don't even have in books, so I really have to get started, because otherwise these things will be lost. A few weeks ago I was in Italy, and I met one of our older sisters. She's in her 90s. I had never interviewed her, and I just was chatting, and she told me how she was in the convent where there were 60 Jews hidden. And one night, one of the Nazis or fascist soldiers, one of them, knocked on the door and asked if there were any Jews hidden in the convent, because it was a known fact. I mean, how could it be that these Nazis and fascists didn't know that they were hidden? But remember, a lot of these places were extraterritorial. They belonged to the Holy See, and therefore they were not allowed in these buildings.
Right, because the Vatican is its own country.
That's right.
And so stuff that belonged to the Vatican, they couldn't come into.
They could not enter.
Right.
So he knocked and said, are there any Jews living here? And the sister said, oh, Jews, no, this is a convent. We have no Jews hidden. And there were 60 of them.
So sister lied?
Of course.
Oh, my word. Who's going to...
And then she went in to warn them to go hide. And one woman was so frightened, and she was pregnant, that they had to rush her to the hospital, and the baby was born prematurely.
Uh-huh.
That's how frightened they became. It was a terrible thing.
Absolutely.
Terrible.
And the... I heard one of the stories of how the sisters took the Nazis around. They didn't realize which door they came in, and they kept taking them around in a circle. So they never even saw the Jews.
No, they couldn't.
See, this is...
Well, we had some very...
Very clever.
One of our nuns, who had been in this country, knew English very well. And she was tall and stately, and she almost looked like a German. She was light-complected. And she was a treasurer. She had to provide food for all these people. So one day she had the courage to go to the German commander. And she just presented herself and requested a pass, because they weren't allowed to leave the city of Rome, a pass to go to northern Italy in order to get a truckload of rice. Well, do you know that she could have been put in prison for that? She was so bold. Instead, the commander gave her the pass. She went to northern Italy and came home with a truckload of rice.
Yeah.
So that's how they were able to feed these people. Yeah. And of course, the Holy Father himself was supplying everyone that was hiding the Jews with food too, because otherwise they couldn't have kept them. They couldn't have taken care of them. They wouldn't have died of starvation. So the trucks, the Vatican trucks, would go around delivering food. And whenever they delivered it, there would be a note with the compliments of His Holiness.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was sending the food.
Yeah.
The Vatican had thousands hidden.
Including the chief rabbi of Rome.
Israel Zolli. And the chief rabbi of Rome, in his book, Before the Dawn, his autobiography, he explains how he knew, and this is a fact, he knew that the Holy Father sent a letter to all these bishops and convents telling people to open the doors to save these Jews, and they obeyed. So it isn't true that nothing was done, that the church was silent. He was silent with words, but what about his actions?
Yeah.
They weren't silent.
He spoke up when he could.
And he did.
He didn't speak up so much that he would aggravate Hitler and cause more death.
Retaliation.
And then he did action to get lives saved, and that was his primary current concern, to save lives. You know, we need to take a little break now, but we're going to come back, and we're going to have your questions for Sister and some of your comments. So please stay with us and ask all the questions you want of this very, very well-informed and exciting Sister. So please stay with us.
Join us next week when special guest Pia DeSalini talks about men, women, and the image and likeness of God.
Bishop Makram Gassis brings news from Sudan.
We are not going to accept that our people have no right to determine their future because this is their God-given human right.
Where is the hope in this war-torn country? Find out this week on The World Over Live, only on EWTN.
Renew your spirit. Strengthen your faith. Put on the armor of God with a Eucharistic pilgrimage.
It gives you an opportunity to go out there and to have that strength, that armor, put on by Christ.
Go on a Eucharistic pilgrimage to the Shrine of the Most Blessed Sacrament in Hanceville, Alabama, dedicated to the Divine Child Jesus.
It's so nice to know there's something like this available in the United States. You don't have to go across the world to find it.
Attend talks on prayer and spiritual enrichment, and join the Poor Clare Nuns of Perpetual Adoration in Holy Mass.
I love the voices of the nuns.
Just south of the shrine is EWTN, where you can attend daily mass, take a network tour, and see where some of your favorite EWTN programs are produced. And you might even be able to join in the studio audience for an EWTN live show. For information on an individual or group pilgrimage to EWTN, call 205-271-2966 or click on the Eucharistic Pilgrimage link at EWTN.com.
The Lord will bless you for coming here.
Welcome back. Great to have you here. We're Sister Margherita Marchione. She's an American, but she has a beautiful Italian name. And she's talking about Pope Pius XII and defending him. And before we go to some of our questions, show us what you got there, Sister. What'd you bring?
I brought my own props.
Yeah, uh-huh.
This is the zucchetto worn by Pope Pius XII. So it's a relic. It's in my possession. I met him in 1957.
See, this is great. I mean, you got a nun pickpocketing the Pope. You know, I mean, this is good. I mean, I've known pickpockets in my life, but this is good. He let you actually have it. You didn't steal it, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm just kidding. All right, we have a question here from the live studio audience. Where are you from?
I'm from Middletown, New York.
Uh-huh. What's your question?
And, Sister, I'd like to know, how has our present Holy Father reacted to criticisms of Pope Pius XII?
Well, the fact that he has appointed Father Peter Gumpel to investigate the life and the works of Pius XII in order to be able to beatify him. Immediately after his death, he was made venerable, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I have holy cards with a prayer to him. And I ask you to pray to Pius XII. And if there are miracles, and there have been miracles. I had an email a couple of months ago from someone in Canada who feels that he was really cured. Now, I don't have the documentation for it yet, but there certainly have been. And the mere fact that the church did get out of this terrible mess of this World War II through the efforts, the peace efforts, too,
yeah,
of Pope Pius, he deserves a lot of recognition.
All right, I'm going to take a call from the audience in television land. Hello?
No.
Where are you calling from?
Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Kenosha, Wisconsin, not that far from Chicago.
No, I wonder if Sister had ever read a book called The Scarlet Pimpernel of the Vatican, and there was a movie made on it too, The Scarlet and the Black, about Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty. He worked in the Vatican, and he always had the code name Gulf. He hid many Jews in the Vatican, and he worked under Pope Pius XII.
You know about him?
Oh, yes, of course. And it's a lovely book, and it's a wonderful film, and I certainly recommend it. And Monsignor Flaherty did a lot of hard work, and he would change his outfits and sneak out of the Vatican, because, you know, they were like prisoners in the Vatican, yeah. and save these people. He saved many, many people.
They're both prisoners of war that escaped, as well as Jews and other folks.
Yes, there were many political refugees, too, that were hidden in the Vatican. Yeah.
We have another question here from the audience. Hello, where are you from?
I'm from Medford, Massachusetts.
Great, and what's your question?
I'd like to know, I have a very dear friend that bought one of the books of the other persuasion, you know, attacking the Pope. Of all of your books, if I can give him one book to read, which one would you recommend? And also, if I could add another curl with you, it seems a lot of us who do pro-life work, would you consider him a candidate to pray to as someone who would be a defender of life?
Absolutely, dear. Absolutely. Going back to the book that I would recommend, if you want to hear the my rebuttal with John Cornwell, who wrote Hitler's Pope, well, then I have a chapter in The Fighting Nun on that. But the answers to all the present-day criticism, to Susan Zuccotti and to Thayer and all the others that have written terrible books these past 4 or 5 years, I think Consensus and Controversy will handle that for you.
Yeah, the book is called Consensus and Controversy. It's the one that we showed earlier that has that protest by Pope Pius XII against the persecution of the Jews. And so you can get all that. And we hope that we'll have some of this, some of these books in our catalog. So if you go to the internet or call our catalog, see if they'll get that, because these are great books by Sister Marchioni.
But the worst of all the books, Father, is really the one that's going to be coming out now in November, Goldhagen's book. So I don't even want to talk about that. But going back to Hitler's Pope, Mr. John Cornwell, whom I refuted on TV when I was introduced, I said, "Mr. Cornwell, I'm delighted to be able to condemn your book."
Yes. The Fighting Nun, indeed. We have a caller coming in. Hello? Let me take this caller next.
Hello, Father.
Where are you calling from?
From North Carolina.
Great. And what's your question?
My question was for you and Sister. If you see any kind of correlation between the Nazis using negative press and distortions about the Catholic Church and what's been going on in this country over the last year.
Yes, of course. But, you know, the strange part is that during the period of Pope Pius XII, every newspaper throughout the world, you can say, and especially the New York Times, did nothing but praise what Pius XII did. Today, the media has just turned things all around.
Including the New York Times.
But how can you, absolutely, more than anyone else in the New York Times, but how can you just disregard what their predecessors have said?
Well, I guess it's sort of like your quote I once heard, if the New York Times doesn't agree with the New York Times, I don't feel I have to either. You know, because they're, all their articles, and you list them, and you don't just list them, you give the actual articles from the 1940s by the New York Times, commending the Pope, and then what the modern authors who never read the...
But I also give in that book 6 clergymen who defied Hitler. Now, you hear people say no one of the German clergy defied Hitler. That's not true at all. There were 6 clergymen. And
bishops.
The irony, the cardinals too, the irony of it all is that I located those 6 articles, it was a series, in the New York Times. But fortunately, the copyright was the Religion News Service, and when I did write to the New York Times, I thought it belonged to them. But they didn't even answer my letter. Whereas I said, well, you don't want to give me the authorization, so I'll get it in a different way, and that's how I got it.
Oh, there you go. We have another question from here in the studio. Father, where are you from?
I'm from the Diocese of Davenport, Iowa.
Great. And what's your question?
Sister, God bless you for your work. I've been praying to Pius XII for since my seminary years. Can you tell us, is there any progress with the beatification for the Holy Father?
Yes. Just yesterday I was speaking to Father Gumpel, who is the person who is responsible for the entire process. And he explained to me that by the end of this year, all the proceedings that are needed to be presented to the Holy Father will be ready. Everything is in press.
God bless you.
Thank you, Tim.
You know, one of the things that I also remember from your book, that the first criticism of the Pope for not doing anything actually came from Joseph Stalin's press.
That's right.
Pravda and the Red Star, the Russian army newspaper. And they were the first ones to criticize the Pope for not doing anything.
And do you know what Stalin asked? No. He wanted to know how many troops the Holy Father had in his army.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how little he knew about the Holy Father.
Well,
and you know what Pius XII answered? Tell my son Joseph that he'll find out when we get in heaven.
You gotta love, a Pope was a little bit of a wise guy.
Oh, but you know, he had a wonderful sense of humor.
Yeah, yeah.
And he did some wonderful things. There's a story that I have in the picture book. I have a number of anecdotes. Could I tell one anecdote?
I'm going to stop you. Go ahead.
Well, anyway, I'd like to tell you about two little altar boys. They were 14 years old, and they were in the seminary. And every morning, this busload of seminarians would go to St. Peter's, and the boys would serve the masses of visiting priests. Well, one day, these two 14-year-old boys served the mass, and then in between waiting for other priests, they began roaming around. And they went in, and oh, they marveled at all the beautiful hallways and looking at everything, and they forgot about time, and they kept on walking, and they got lost. And then suddenly, when they realized that they were supposed to go get the bus to go home, they became a little frightened, and they panicked, and they went in and out rooms. And here they go into one room, it was like a little library, and there was a priest there all dressed in white. And he said, well, can I help you? And the boy said, you know, we're lost, and, you know, we're supposed to be getting the bus in front of St. Peter's. And the priest said, well, come with me a minute. And he took him into another room. And he made them sit down, and he got them a glass of milk each and some cookies. And then after they finished, they began chatting. And then he said, and now, my boys, I think you better start going. So he said, before you go, though, the Holy Father would like to give you a special blessing for you and your families. Well, the boys almost died. And then he took them by the hand and took them to their, told them how to get out of his apartment. It was, they were in his private apartment.
All right. We have another caller. Hello?
Hello.
Hello, where are you from?
I'm from New Jersey, actually.
Oh, great. Not too far from your sister.
Yeah, Fairleigh Dickinson. Actually, I never knew it was a Catholic university. Actually.
No, it isn't.
Well, it isn't.
Oh, it isn't. Yeah, you just teach there anyway, huh?
Yeah, sister's just sort of an interloper.
Oh, okay. Well, my question is that what are some ways, I guess one way would be reading Mother's book, but what are some ways to dispel these myths about Pope Pius?
The only way is to fight, to speak up, to write about it, and let people know that what they are saying is incorrect. Mm-hmm. It's unjust, and there's no evidence for what they are maintaining, and we just have to fight this battle.
Well, one of the...
Of course, pray. That's understood. First of all, we pray.
And then you fight.
That's right.
I see your M.O. Well, some of the things, again, in terms of response, knowing some of these stories here. For instance, the time that the Nazis said that they would round up the Jews unless they provided 50 kilograms of gold.
And they did, and the Holy Father was willing to help them out with that, too. And they took the gold, and then after that, they had that terrible roundup in Rome of these 900, 1,000 Jews that were sent to the concentration camp.
So that the Nazis had said, give us a certain amount of gold.
And we'll leave you alone. But that wasn't true.
I think it was about 100 pounds of gold that
50 kilos.
Well, that's 100 pounds.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so 100 pounds of gold.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They didn't have enough.
They went to the Holy Father. The Holy Father said, give them anything they need.
Right.
They didn't really need it because then the Italians themselves began contributing.
Yeah.
And they satisfied the Nazis with the money, but then a few days later you had this terrible roundup of Jews in... And, of course, that's where Susan Zuccotti, another one of the opposition, claims that the Holy Father did nothing to save these people, claims that there's no evidence, no documentation that Pius XII did anything to save these people. Well, in my book, I bring out all the documentation that you could possibly find. She has just ignored it. And not only what is known publicly, but I had people writing, giving me the information. A Monsignor Ferrofino from France, he's living in France now, but he gave me a wonderful evidence that wasn't available until recently. He wrote to me from France. He's about 90-some years old right now, but he said he was secretary in Santo Domingo to the nuncio, and he knows, and he was there, he confirmed that the Holy Father wrote to the nuncio, Silvano was his name, and asked him to get 400 visas for this group of Jews that had to get out of the country immediately. Well, the secretary to the nuncio said in his letter to me that the general, Trujillo, there gave him the visas, and 400 Jews went to the Dominican Republic. Later on, they left the Dominican Republic, went through Mexico, and came to the United States, the land that would not receive them. They had visas, they were supposed to come to the United States, but we wouldn't let them in. And so the Holy Father provided the 400 visas for these people. We have so much documentation about the Holy Father paying trips for so many people to come to get out of Germany, get out of Europe in order to save their lives. And for each one of them, he had to pay $800 for transportation from Europe.
But he would pay it.
He paid. And he spent all his own personal patrimony for these people. His secretary, sister, Mother Pasqualina there, is the one who took care of these matters. And she has stated in a deposition that many times she would deliver to different Jewish families or refugees that needed the money envelopes, and there would be as much as $1,000 in an envelope for these people to save themselves and to go places. There's a nun who's still alive out in Wisconsin somewhere, her name is Sister Matilda, who I have her voice on a tape, in fact, where she tells a story of how she and seven or eight of the sisters of her order were in Rome, and in order to get out of there to come to the United States, the Holy Father provided them with a letter written in his own hand for them to be taken care of. They had to go to Portugal, and from Portugal they got on a ship with other refugees and came to this country.
And he also had then Archbishop Roncalli,
yes,
who later became John the 23rd, helping to get Jews.
You want to hear a good story about Roncalli?
Do I love good stories? Of course.
Well, anyway, Clark Gable, the Pius XII.
You knew Clark Gable?
No, Pius XII was a movie buff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Clark Gable was there with his wife and daughter, and they were having an interview with, they were having an audience with Pius XII. And instead of staying 10 or 15 minutes, they were there for a long time, over an hour. And waiting outside was the next person who was supposed to go in for the audience. And when they come out, who walks in but Roncalli, who then became the Pope. But he had to wait there that extra hour because the Pope was enjoying Clark Gable.
We have a caller. Hello. Hello?
Cheerful good evening and peace to you.
And thank you very much. Where are you from?
I'm in Cherokee Village, and I have the privilege of being named after the Pope. So I'm Peter Paul in Arkansas.
Wait a minute. This is
John Paul. I'm a paisan of sister there.
Okay, great.
Sister, the Holy Father, Pope Pius XII, was known as the angelic pastor, and the chief rabbi of Rome admired him so much that he was converted and became a Catholic. That's Could you right. comment on that?
Yes. He became a Catholic, and he took the name Eugenio for his baptismal name. And he was hidden in the Vatican while the Nazis were in Rome. So he experienced what it meant to be a guest of the Holy Father. Do you know that the Holy Father would not accept coffee all those years because the rest of the people hidden there could not have it? They didn't have enough. He would not accept it. It was a rarity to have coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
And he would not have heat in his apartment. He refused to have any heating in his apartment because the rest of the buildings didn't have heat for these people.
So if they don't, he won't either.
He wouldn't either.
And you mentioned that Rabbi Zolli became baptized, not just because he was hidden in Rome.
Oh,
he
no.
really, he studied
he
Catholicism.
He was a theologian. He was a great man, mm-hmm. and he wrote some wonderful books.
Yes.
And his book, his memoirs are called Before the Dawn. It's a lovely book in which he speaks about his conversion, how one day he just saw in sort of a vision. Oh, speaking of visions, can I tell you something else?
Well,
that you don't
not
know?
Until you finish this story. I'm not going to let you off the hook because you didn't explain why Israel Zolli took the name Eugenio.
In honor of Pius XII.
Well, why was Eugenio related to Pius? That was his name before he was Pius. Right?
Eugenio, yes.
Right, right. See, not everybody
it
knows
his,
that.
Oh, his arm.
See,
sorry.
That's it.
I'm sorry.
Boy, oh,
that
boy,
was,
oh, boy.
That was the Holy Father's name, Eugenio
right.
Pacelli.
Right, right. So
little,
they
They took it, and he took Eugenio as his name in to honor the Holy Father.
See, I want you to explain it to me, Lucy.
Yeah, I know.
You know
I was going to tell you something about a vision.
Go ahead, tell me.
Do you know that Father Pio, St. Pio?
Yeah, St. Pio.
Wrote in his diary that when Pius XII died, at that moment, he saw his soul in a vision going to heaven. So, you say that Pius XII should not be canonized? Yeah, he's already in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
He's already canonized, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pius XII was seen in the vision by Father Pio, and he wrote that, and I have it from another source, and it was checked out, and I know that this is a fact.
That's something important
that,
to know as
I don't
well.
Know whether I have it in the book or not, but anyway, I just
I don't think
this.
You do. No. I didn't see it in your books, and I saw everything. I read. I actually read all the books.
Well, that's why you, see,
you
I have
know?
To do another book now.
See, just to keep me busy. Well, you know, it's one of these situations in which the world experienced one of the most horrendous evils ever. So much so that we look to that period as practically the very norm for what it means to be evil.
Oh,
to be a Nazi is just to be already called somebody evil.
Personification of evil.
Yeah.
It was really.
And one, and I think something to keep in mind too, that I was talking to Jana Benkovich, where she's making a new series, and I was on one of her shows, and we were talking about how the religious motivation behind Nazism was paganism.
Mm-hmm.
He was a neo-pagan. He was promoting the worship of the old Teutonic gods, especially among the SS.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much he really believed it, but he had that, and he promoted it. And it was tied into his anti-Semitism very, very closely. And in that time, I think we could say that, sure, we wish more people, especially more Catholics, had helped more Jews. Now,
but
I'm very
you know,
proud.
There were a lot of them did.
There were. I know it. And again, I'm very,
and
very
proud. And they risked their lives.
Absolutely. But we still wish more had done it, and that more Catholics and other Christians.
But you know, you don't know the circumstances of some of those Catholics. They had their own children to protect, and
right.
they knew that if they were
sure.
taking others, and just from their very features, they would be recognized as Jewish.
Absolutely.
They would be, the whole family would be annihilated.
I know it. And it's still a point, though, I think, while we can understand it, And sometimes we can also have to say that some of them were anti-Semitic. There were those. And there were others who just were afraid. And again, I wish more had been saved. But the tragedy is they weren't. And 6 million Jews,
and 6 million
non-Jews. And 6 million non-Jews. I was going to say that, see? I told you I read your book. But I think it's that 6 million Jews and 6 million non-Jews plus another 25 million people and throughout the war died, soldiers, non-combatants. And that at this point, you know, what we have to do is know our history. We have to know the truth of that history. The truth of the history about Pius XII, what he did, and what other Catholics did, and the way that he's honored, and not allow the dishonor to continue, but rather to really step up to the bat. And it's not something that's just a neutral thing, but rather this is a very important point. We have to be people committed to what's true, good and bad. And we have to examine our conscience as a group and as individuals. But we all, in that examination, when we have saints and heroes, let us be the ones who stand up for them and for the truth. Sister, I want to thank you so much for being here. And for us to be able to bring more people like Sister here,
I'd like to
please help us out. We have to have you support us. This is your network. And let me give you my blessing in the Father, the Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen. God bless you and good night.
Thank you.